This is Max Freedom Long, fellow of the Huna Fellowship, speaking again. I wish the new Huna fellows and those who may later join and who are now listening to tape lectures to hear a lecture given by Isabel Hickey of Boston. In this, she gives a vivid picture of a large part of her life spent following the direction of the High Self. In the beginning, she didn't call it the High Self. She thought God was directing her. She dedicated her life to follow whatever dictation might be given, whatever word was passed to her in any way, shape, or form, to do service under the direction of God. As a matter of fact, she simply called for the direction of the High Self, know it or not, and she got into a most amazing series of experiences. And she tells about this in a lecture which was given at Harmony Grove near Escondido in Southern California in 1964. It was under the auspices of Riley Crabb's BASRA organization, that is Borderland Research Associates. I was happy to be there to hear Isabel in her lecture, and of course I blushed when she praised me and praised my work. But I want you to hear her story and her lecture. It's inspiring, and it gives you a little idea of what happens when we invite the High Self to take its part in our lives. She invited it to take its part completely and was able to follow the dictates of the inner guidance. I will turn you over now to the lecture tape itself.
Ames, and we get along very well with each other, so make her very welcome today. Now, returning to our speaker, who is Isabel Hickey from Boston, she's really quite a stranger to me. I've had just a very little bit of chat with her. So I've asked, when I get her up here, that she will tell you a little bit about herself. She is a counselor there, is an astrological counselor, I guess you'd call her. She has her own group, but she says is nameless, so it's awfully hard for me to tell you about it. So I've suggested that when she comes here and tells you about Heaven Knows, do you? She'll tell you a bit about her group. We're very glad. She is an associate, BSRA associate, and Riley Crabb said that in his lecture tour across the country, he found her group one of the most live, nameless or not, that he encountered. So I give you the name of Isabel Hickey from Boston.
Hello, everybody. It's a great joy to be here, I can tell you. This is my first vacation in 25 years. And it's 25 years I've been in group work. I was interested in what Florence said because when I tuned in and asked what God wanted me to talk about today, he said, tell something of your personal experience just because of the principles involved. And I will tell you a little bit about my beginning development and how the group came together. I will say this, and I can tell this family this. In fun, we call ourselves astral angels because we said we weren't good enough to be real ones, but we were trying. But we've kept it a very free-flowing organism. Back in the 30s, I came in contact with my first teacher. She was an occult teacher, and I believe an initiate. You know, if anyone's an initiate, they never tell you. If they tell you, you can be sure they're not. So she was, as I say, an occult teacher. Someone had told me that there was a group in Brookline, Mass. That I would be quite interested in. And anybody was welcome to come. They had no name. They just met and discussed spiritual principles. So I went, and I found it most interesting. I had been brought up in a Presbyterian family, and the idea of reincarnation and karma just horrified them. So when I heard it, I just knew it was true. I had felt it since I was a little child, that I had lived many times and would live many more times, but no one ever told me. Well, one of the things that amazed me was to hear people talking about astrology. Now, in this group, there were a couple of professors from Harvard. There was a State Street lawyer. There were teachers. There was a man who ran a wholesale plumbing concern very successfully. And when I heard them mention astrology, which to me was merely fortune-telling, like it is to most of the laymen, I thought, my, these people talking about astrology. But I had enough sense to keep my mouth shut and listen. And I remember the night I walked up to the teacher and I said, I'd like to study astrology. Where can I find a teacher? That night she had told us the spiritual law that if you want anything, send your demand out into the ether and it will be fulfilled. She looked at me. She said, were you listening tonight? And I said, yes. She said, if you're supposed to find an astrology teacher, you will find one. I said, all right. Rather flip at times. I said, all right, God, I'm looking for an astrology teacher. Send me one. And she smiled. She had a good sense of humor. And she said, you'll find one. Well, about a week after I'd become interested at the time in the Eastern thought, I read of a Swami who was coming to the Hotel Terrain. And I had two of my Catholic friends who I was supposed to be with that Sunday night, and I said, would you mind coming with me? It might interest you. So we went a little bit early, and I was sitting there thinking I was going to meet someone like my wonderful teacher, Swami Paramananda of the Vedanta Center, and not knowing there were all kinds of Swamis, I was drawing a picture of Swami on my folder just as I sat there doodling. And the woman beside me, she says, I know that man. I said, do you? And I thought I must be a better artist than I thought. And so just as she was talking to me, I took a look at the Swami who came out to fix a table or something, and I said, oh, dear. He looked like a Coney Island bracketeer. And I thought, here I am introducing these two people who've never heard of Eastern thought to something that is not going to be beneficial. So she said to me, she said, who are you? And I told her, she said, I'd like you to come and see me. I said, where do you live? This is the little old lady sitting beside me. She says, well, I'm an astrologer and I live at the Hotel Canterbury. I said, do you give lessons? She said, yes. I said, I'll be around to see you. So I said to the two people with me, come on, let's go. And they said, well, I thought you wanted to come to lecture. No, something's changed my mind. Let's get out of here. So I got them out the door, and they looked at me as if I were crazy. I said, I didn't really go to hear the lecture. I went to find an astrologer. That started my study of astrology, and I started it with no idea of doing anything in the field. Frankly, I was only interested in understanding the spiritual and the cosmic laws. And one of the things I found out as I went along is that when you dedicate yourself to service, which our teacher gave us the opportunity to do, she said, if you so wish, you may dedicate yourself to the service of light, but you will not choose what you shall do. She said, when you dedicate yourself, you do whatever God wants you to do. And so I had dedicated myself to serving God in whatever capacity he saw fit to use me. I think I'd have been a little bit more careful if I knew how he was going to use me, because in New England and in Boston, astrology, you can well imagine, in the 30s was something that was a dirty word. So I said to her, well, After you dedicate yourself, what do you do? She said, you ask for guidance. But I said, I'm such an impulsive person, how will I know when it's guidance? This question was asked in the car coming over this morning. I said, you won't. She said, you won't. She said, once you dedicate yourself, you do the first service that comes along for you to do. She said, remember the place on which you stand is holy ground, and you start from where you are. She said, you'll be tested very much in the little things before you'll be given a big job. And interestingly enough, the very first thing I was asked to do after I had dedicated myself to the service of the light was something that some of you may have heard of and may not have. It stemmed out of Utica, New York. It seems there was a man there who lost his mother. And another man, who was a friend of his, wrote him a most beautiful letter and explained to him what life after death really was. And this man, who was a big businessman in the city, got so much out of it that he wanted to share it with anyone that was grieving. And so they had many, many folders made up, and they left it, they made the folders and the envelopes. It was sent second class mail, so it was not sealed. The only thing you knew where it came from was a box number in Utica, New York, which they had to have. And they agreed that they would ask in meditation that anyone who felt so inclined would send these out, taking the death column notices to the relatives of whoever was the person in the death column. Well, I can assure you, more people with the name, with the initial M, die than anybody else. Because I took the M's in the death column. Of course, that meant MC, MAC, and M. This is why there were so many of them. And we were asked to, we got the stamps and sent the letters. And we were asked with each sent to hold it like this and ask that a healing angel or an invisible helper go with that letter to bring understanding, light, and comfort to whomever the letter would reach. That was my first service. This was before the group activity started. I did it for almost a year, and then someone else took it on because there was another job for me to do. Now, I did it for a long time, and having Mercury in Virgo, I am very openly skeptical about a lot of things, and I found it was a very good way to be, because you're going to ask, and if you ask, you shall receive. So after I'd done it for quite a long while, I said, Father, I'd just like to know whether this was helping or not. I said, I'd really like to know if anyone gets anything out of this. It was depression time, and I actually, it was a real sacrifice, I can tell you, to do all of this. The stamps ran to about $10 a week, I guess. And I went without many things in order to do it. Within a week, I got a letter sent from Utica, New York. And in the letter, it said, I don't know who mailed this that I have received. It came from Waltham, Massachusetts. That's where I was living at the time. But I want whoever sent it to know how much it meant to me. I have lost my dear mother, but this has given me comfort. I know she still lives. And whoever you are, thank you. She says, the tears are falling too fast, and the tears were on the letter. I can say no more. Now, I found out something about God. He'll only give you one indication that your work is good. He's not going to cater to the little old ego one single bit. And every time I had an experience that had to do with these spiritual laws, it was only once this came. But it did give me the idea it was helping, and that's all I needed to know. That if only one person gets something through you as a channel, it's a good thing you've been born. So time went on, and many of the things the teacher taught me, I said, maybe, maybe not. If it's so, prove it to me. For instance, we were told to dedicate ourselves, to be used while our body slept. And I said that every night for a long time. Use me in your vineyard, or let me be taught of thee while my body sleeps. I'm telling you these things because these are things that every one of us can do that I've passed on to the group, and you can find out for yourself whether they work or not. So I had said that for a long time. And one night I said, now look, is it possible? Can I be used? Can all of us be used while our body sleeps? I don't mind working night and day if I know it's worthwhile. That night I had the most wonderful experience because I was consciously on the next dimension. And I was very conscious of someone behind me guiding me. And I was down in what I call the lower astrals. At that time, I didn't know much about them. I found out a lot since. And there were some very funny colors down there, a murky green and a slimy red is the only way I can say it. Now, on that dimension, you don't have to talk. You think to, and it's thought back to you. So I no sooner had the thought, these are horrible colors, than someone thought back to me, these are the only colors we know here. And I realized that it was one of the astral slums. But I wasn't down far enough at that moment. I had to descend into what my brain would interpret as a basement. And there was a young fellow lying there, sort of semi-reclining on a couch. And he said, in mental telepathy, will you help me? And I heard myself answering him, this is why I've come, what is wrong? And he said, I've been earthbound since the First World War, and I do so want to be free. I put my arm around him as I say, remember, this was not this Isabel. This was the inner self functioning, who knows a heck of a lot more than I do. And I started to say the Lord's Prayer. And for the first time in this present life consciousness, I had a touch of what the compassion of the Christ could mean. Because as I said that prayer, that boy's body wreathed in my arm. In awful agony. And my heart was wide open for the agony. But I knew the agony was his way to freedom. I knew that only through this could he be free. And so, with all the compassion in the world, I said the Lord's Prayer, knowing that only if he tore himself from his past, whatever it was, could he possibly be liberated? And just as I finished the Lord's Prayer, his body slumped in my arms, something went swish, and I was awake in my bed simultaneously, shaking like a leaf. You know, I have meditated a year on that Lord's Prayer since that time, and nothing bothers me so much as to hear somebody say, Our Father, amen. And I've often said to the group, don't say it if you do not say it in full consciousness, because that is a very powerful spiritual mantra. And I'm going to digress here a minute to tell you of an experience in the group one night. I speak mostly inspirationally, and I never know who's coming. And I'm not allowed to have any preconceived ideas with my mind what I'm going to talk about. It's very disconcerting, I can tell you, to sit down and not know what's coming out. That particular night, when it came time for meditation, I heard myself saying, If any of you say the Lord's Prayer and not mean it when you say, forgive, that I may be forgiven, don't be a hypocrite, leave it out. Don't say it. And I went on to say there wasn't any of us that doesn't need forgiveness for something. And until we do forgive others, how are we going to be forgiven? And I often wonder why I say what I do. And I wondered why I was saying it so strongly that night. It was a lovely summer night and the windows were open. And after the meeting, a stranger came up to me that one of the group had brought in. And she said, Mrs. Hickey, you were talking to me tonight. I said, was I? I didn't know. She said, I said the Lord's Prayer tonight for the first time in 20 years. She said, I have hated my father for those 20 years because of my mother's death. He was brutal to her, and through his brutality, she died. And I said, I would never say that prayer, and I would never have anything to do with God again. And she said, tonight, she said, you sure shocked me when you said, don't be a hypocrite, leave it out if you can't forgive. She said, when I started to say that prayer, I knew I was being touched by some kind of spiritual force. And she said, when I finished, and I really said it and for the first time forgave him, she said, I heard my blessed mother's voice, and she broke down crying, saying, now, darling, God can forgive you. She said, I have lived a bad life for 20 years because I've been so bitter. And just as she said it, and this is the only time this has ever happened, the whole room was filled with the fragrance of the most heavenly roses I ever smelt. And my practical self went around to the window sniffing to see if anybody had roses outside. We couldn't find any. And so, if you ever are to meditate on that Lord's Prayer sentence by sentence and live with it a long time, you'll realize that can release earthbounds. It can do the most tremendous job for you that you could possibly imagine. So when you say it with your heart, not with your head or with your lips, and you will get a tremendous blessing through it. Well, going back to this development, I went on a little while doing that work, and one morning in meditation, it came to me that I was supposed to be an astrologer. My heart plumped right down to my feet, and I said, oh, no. Please, no, anything but that. I knew my family were going to be up in arms. I know what Boston is like. And I know it was going to be rocky going. Well, I have to tell you what, I didn't give in willingly because it took me about 6 months to really get to work. And I started at home first. I never sought for anybody. I was told the people that could be helped through me would be drawn to me, and that has been true from that day to this. And so people started coming to the house. One night I went into a meeting in town, and four or five followed me out, wanted to know if I was studying astrology. I said, yes, I'm a new student. Well, would you let us come over to your house and you tell us what you know? I said, I don't know anything. I said, I'm only just studying. Well, will you let us come over and talk about it? I said, yes, because I always like people and I always enjoy them. I said, come ahead. So over they came, and they wanted to know if they could make a regular thing of it. I said, sure. So we would have a discussion on astrology, and then we got into cosmic laws, then we would have coffee, and then we would have fun. And we're a very jolly group, and I hope if any of you ever get to Boston, you'll come and see for yourself. Three of them are here today who've gone into other sections of the country, and we've all got together here and having a wonderful time. So that's the way the group got started. After a while, the walls in the house started to bulge. There wasn't enough room. Of course, while I was home, I didn't charge anything for my work, And we took all our collections, and it was during the war. By that time, the war had come along. And we sent packages to Europe using the collection for the mailing. And packages went all the time the war was going. Without any saying who it came from, we got the addresses and sent them. And finally, they insisted that we put a name on it, so we did. I think one of the greatest thrills we got was one letter that came through, and we had sent in October a great deal to a family in Scotland who were in quite bad condition, and they had six children. And we had said a prayer that that would reach them before Christmas, because you know how the mails were during the war. Well, we got a letter towards the last of January. The packages landed there on Christmas Eve, and she said, if you could have seen those children's faces, you would have been more than repaid for the trouble you took. You see, in our group, we really believe that if you ask, you shall receive. And we ask God for everything. We don't try to do anything ourselves, because we know that if you ask, Jesus was right. He said, ask and you shall receive, knock and the door shall be opened. We didn't look for anybody for our group. They were attracted from within. The group smiled when Riley had made the remark that we were well organized, because we didn't organize anything. The group was drawn from within. If anyone wanted to come, they were more than welcome. If they wanted to go, they were just as welcome. And to this day, that group started back in 1939. On my trip west, I met one of my astral angels I hadn't seen for 18 years. Picked it up just where it left off. You know, when you function as souls in group consciousness, you never lose each other. And that is one of the things that in regard to group consciousness, because I know this age coming in is going to be a group age, not an individual age. We've come out of mass consciousness into individualism. We have to become individuals. We do have to be born again. I used to hate that term when I heard the Presbyterians use it. I had to find out what it meant. You have to be born out of the personality into your soul consciousness. And I'll tell you right now what I firmly believe, that any group that functions on the personality level is going to have nothing but trouble and bickering and all that. But if you function as souls, and this is true of any group, you function under a completely different consciousness. Because you recognize that we as personalities do not amount to a darn. That's the dark side of ourselves. That's the false side of ourselves. That's the side that has to be changed. And so if you judge me, or I judge you by the personality level, the most changing part of us, you're never going to know who I am. And I'm never going to know who you are. And so from the beginning in our group, we functioned as souls. Now, there's always tests. Don't think there isn't. In fact, we have a little fun about our tests, because everything will go very nicely for a little length of time, then in walks a tester. And this is part of your growth. This is part of your development. You get testers in your personality life. I remember incident that might be of use to you, where we had dedicated our house to God, and I no sooner moved in than I no longer had a room for about 3 years, because somebody was always needing it. And we had taken a particular person in who was extremely difficult. She was an unregenerate Scorpio, in case you know what that means astrologically. And she was over 70, and she was very, very grumpy and grouchy. We did everything we could to please God for her. You see, don't try to please people, because you never will. But if you please your Heavenly Father, you'll please those people far more than if you try to please them. I found that out. And so I sat down one morning in meditation, and I said, look, Father, we've done everything we could. We have loved her. We've been patient. Now what gives? And like a flash came the impression, she's the pearl in your oyster. I went to the telephone, called my girlfriend. I said, how are pearls made? She said, some friction gets in the oyster, and in order to protect itself, it builds this very beautiful pearly substance around the irritation. Well, I thought, well, bless you, high self, you sure hit it on the nose. But you know, every one of us have people that irritate us, let's face it. But when you can think of it in that laughing fashion, oh, she's only the pearl in your oyster, it takes away the tension. It makes it much easier to live with the what's going to be a pearl. So I'm telling you these little incidents because you can use them in your everyday life. And the next time anybody irritates you, remember the story of the pearl. And remember the beauty you'll build up of covering the irritation with that pearly substance of love. So came time, as I say, the walls were bulging. People were sitting on the stairs and everywhere. And someone said to me, well, Isabel, I think you better move to Boston. I said, how would I move to Boston? I haven't any money. I couldn't pay any rent. And she looked at me, she said, go against your own teaching, don't you? So oftentimes we do. I said, all right, if we're supposed to be in Boston, we'll go to Boston. You know, the life of the Spirit is absolutely wonderful. You'll never have a dull moment. I've said, if I should have a tombstone, which I don't intend to have, the only thing I'd want on it, she never was bored. Because, let me tell you, the adventure of the Spirit is the most wonderful life you can live. It is never dull. You never are without something to test your mettle, challenge you, but it's all fun. It really is. You know, I used to wonder, even before I went into the spiritual world, why Jesus talked so much about joy, and I looked around at the sourpusses everywhere and wondered where the joy was. This is true. He said, I come that your joy might be full. And I'll tell you frankly, when I meet anyone who knows nothing about joy and doesn't radiate it, I know they don't know anything about light. They haven't got it in them. You can see it the minute you see a person. Are they joyful? Well, they're off the beam if they're not. It isn't anything you say, it's what you radiate. So, this was very funny. Because the personality you'll see keeps intruding its ideas all the time. And one afternoon, I got a telephone call from a woman who said her name was Beauty Cherry. Oh, but I met you, Mrs. Hickey. And she says, I'd love to meet you. And I says, oh, God, now why did you do that to me? She went on and on and on. And just broke Well, I never turn anybody down, you know, just because I don't know whether God's sending them or not. And if he is, I better be on the beam. And so I thought, well, God, I don't know why you've put this on my neck, but she said, I'm only going to be in Boston 2 days, and I've got to see you. And I said, well, the only chance I have to see you, I'm going to a dinner tonight. I'm down at a particular center, and if you want to come to the dinner with me, I'll be glad to talk to you. I went to the dinner, and the minute I walked in the door, I knew Birdie right off fast. So anyway, during the dinner, she wasn't particularly interested in me. There were some good-looking men, and her eyes kept wandering towards the men. And I was still wondering inside of me, why? You know, I'm always asking God questions. And after the meeting, she said, I want you to meet my sister. She's Leo, too. And she said, she's over here on Boylston Street, and when you take me in, I want you to meet her. So I went back with her, and the minute I looked at her sister, I knew we had been friends for many, many lifetimes. And she knew it, too. And I knew why I had to put up with Bertie.